Hello, good people, and welcome to Season 6, Episode 8 of the Brunswick Beer Collective. Yes, we're up to Episode 8, and yes, yeah. I do have to ask Jeff as to how many
At least we did it off-air, though, right?
Well, that's true.
We had kept it off-air until you decided to bring it up.
Exactly, then it all went fucking pear-shaped, didn't it?
Whatever, man.
Anyway, I am Chris Shorten, as usual. With me is Jeffrey Chi.
G'day.
And with us is Zev.
Hey.
And Zev is the... What I know you're from, I don't know what your actual role is. You're from Collins Street Brewing.
Correct. So I founded Collins Street Brewing.
It's built it Amish style, like, you know.
100%.
Brick by brick.
Yeah. Stone by stone.
Absolutely. Yeah. I do my best to leverage off everyone that I work with, but I seem to have my finger in every pie that happens, which I think is the number one pitfall of anybody that's ever started anything, right?
Oh, yeah, so, yeah. You can never really step away from it. You're always sort of, I can probably do that. I can probably do that as well. I can do this stuff as well. But what, I mean, you're obviously the founder. Are you the brewer as well?
Absolutely. So I do work with... in our recipe development, I mainly work with one other brewer.
Mm-hmm.
We have a major, major clash in approach in kind of what we want to brew. And I think that's fantastic because it really balances out, what we end up bringing to market. We'll get to it, but you know, the Urban Ale is 100% my recipe and something that was just developed over time, and something I'm majorly passionate about, as I'm sure you
I'm
can
getting
tell.
That impression. That there's a lot of grins here, but they're worthy. It's okay.
Thank you.
I'll admit I didn't know you guys existed, and I kept Googling to find out whether you were on Collins Street in Melbourne, because that would be awesome if I could go to a brew house in Collins Street in Melbourne.
Yeah, I thought that too, but then I thought also, like, you kind of need a certain amount of space in order to have a brew house, and those spaces don't really exist on Collins Street
100%.
In Melbourne.
No. Yeah. I think it was probably... It was a bit of an oversight initially, but you know, when we decided that was going to be our name, and you know, I'll tell you a bit about why we named it Collins Street Brewing. My background is totally not in hospitality, beer, sales, nothing, right?
You were a former mime, yes.
Straight up.
Look, at least the truth is out there now. You know, you can rest easy. No, go on.
I was in banking before, you know, finance, and that's where my education is, and brewing was always just a major passion of mine. I was sitting in my office in Collins Street. The truth is, the story starts far, far before this, but to this end, I was sitting
the pointy end.
Yeah, exactly right. Sitting in my office in Collins Street, thinking to myself, "Gosh, this is shit." Right. And yeah.
What have I done with my life?
That's exactly right. And it was at that moment that it was like, "No, I've got to start the Collins Street Brewing Company." And that's where I built the business model. I mean, I'm going to start defaming myself here, but
there we go.
You're allowed to defame yourself. That's okay. That's
unless you really want to sue yourself, in which case, well, that's okay as well.
I'd say I spent several, if not many, hours working for somebody else, working on recipe development and things like that. So that's where the idea of Collins Street Brewing came from.
In my mind, this has started out with you sort of getting some sort of visit from either three ghosts, Dickensian style, or I'm seeing a light through a church, Blues Brothers style.
Straight
but
up.
The end result being this epiphany moment where it's suddenly like, I need to start a brewery.
You know what? As cliche as it sounds, it's exactly what it was.
Wait, which one? The Blues Brothers or
or Dickens?
Yeah.
It was, the Blues Brothers, I'd say.
Yeah. It's a better choice.
Yeah, thanks. go on.
Obviously there's this eureka moment where suddenly all these things happen. But one thing that always, I mean, it takes, I guess to do anything on a large scale like this takes, I mean, clearly that you left your super job in finance, you know, went out on the lam for a while. It takes balls to do it.
Yeah, I probably didn't realize at the time how much balls it takes.
Well, you probably wouldn't do it if you did, right? Yeah. That's the great thing about these things.
100%. I once had a professor at university that said, if everyone was straight up rational, we would get nothing done. Because the chances of actually succeeding, especially in a space where you've got, you know, it's a highly competitive market with many other players, it's a tough gig. But if you've got the passion for it and you can't think of anything else, you're literally waking up in the middle of the night and thinking about, you know,
well, that's because you were hungover.
Yeah. So I was like, ah, shit. I definitely should have drank that beer. Yeah, look, I mean, that's really what it was all about for me. It was totally passion-driven. But I guess to answer the question, you know, it didn't happen overnight. There was an epiphany moment. Going from that moment to getting our first beer to market was about 18 months.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, I mean, you know, that was almost rushed. You know, that was getting it done as quickly as we could whilst having a policy of doing everything that we did properly.
Yep.
Yeah.
Right. So, yeah.
And now you've got... So, okay, so the one that we know about is the Urban Ale, and we'll have that later. What the fuck is an Urban Ale? I mean, does it have a skateboard? Does it...
You know what? I've been...
And what would on tap say about this?
We'll get to that later.
Yeah.
I get the question a lot because it's something that we came up with, and I think there was, you know, after starting to use it, I think we did find somebody in the States that has been using an urban pale ale, you know, for a while. But you know, we didn't see that before we actually, you know, launched our product. The idea was to create something that started before that. I knew exactly what I wanted to create as far as a beer goes. Mm-hmm. I knew that it didn't fit into a specific category per se. It wasn't a straight down the line pale ale. You know, that's the closest thing you can compare it to is maybe a golden. But even, you know, what is a golden ale? Well, who really knows what a golden ale is, right?
I guess it's just based on colour, and you've seen enough golden ales that you go, okay, that's what a golden ale should be.
Right, right, exactly right. At the same time, I kind of had this philosophy that if you're going to do something, do it right. You know, if you're going to make an IPA, make an IPA.
Yep.
Don't make a watered down, you know, 4.5%, unbalanced.
Yeah, you take the fixation approach if you're going to make an IPA.
Exactly, like, right. 100%.
Yeah, the signature IPA, you know.
Exactly right. And I say that, you know, if I'm not going to create that, then I have no right to call it that.
Sure.
Flipping that circle one step. Okay, that didn't work. Anyway, flipping that around. if that you don't know what an urban ale should taste like, how do you know that you've done it?
But well, I believe I've created it. I believe I've created an urban ale. I mean, the urban ale really represented was very much linked to our brand. So my beer thesis, the once bitter beer thesis, is about approachable craft beer.
Look, I'm just impressed that you have a beer thesis.
I spent too many years at university.
Because I work in finance too, so you use the word thesis all the fucking time. Like, you know, what is the thesis underpinning whatever, you know?
That would be the first thing I'd edit out.
I'm sure it is, but you can't edit talking, Chris. Well, you can in this case, but
I've got the.
But
I've
in
got
real time,
right
you
here.
Can't.
No.
So,
yeah.
And it go.
Well, look, I mean, you know, my approach and is. Everything that I'm passionate about in the beer space is about approachable craft beer.
Mm-hmm.
I think that there's some fantastic people out there doing some fantastic things with some fantastic polarizing styles, which is great and enriches everything. But my personal preference is, you know, I'm of the belief that just because something's approachable and just because a Carlton Draft drinker would find it easy to move onto, you know, a certain product, doesn't mean that that product needs to be bland or lacking in flavor or low in quality or anything like that. So I think there's a, we generally, we're in a really undeveloped craft beer market. The top end of the market, which is very easy for, you know, myself and my team to get caught in and get pulled towards, is all about finding that funky new, you know, strain of lacto to, you know what I mean?
It's the journey.
Yeah. Exactly right. So, you know, but at the same time, I think that there's a massive gap in between us and the other majority, whatever the number is. I don't know, maybe it's 95%, maybe it's more, maybe it's less, but those people. And there's some people doing fantastic things to bridge that space. And that's the position that we see ourselves in as well.
Well, it is a question of whether, God, we're going all serious here. It's a question of whether we have craft beer and then we have artisan craft beer. And the artisan craft beer could be the ones that are like limited runs or the ones that push the boundaries. But then you have regular craft beer. Jeff?
Yeah, I think that's almost just going too far. I think that's a, that it's almost a pointless distinction between the two things.
Fine, be that way.
But it's like, I mean, it's like with
No. Go.
It's like with a lot of things, you know, like, you know, you've got limited runs of, I don't know, like say like a CD comes out, right? You get like the normal version of the CD, you get like the limited edition version of the CD. Like, I hate that shit, right? It's kind of like, why? Just, you know, so, and I think that, you know, drawing the line, like, you know, we could, it's like when we were talking about, like, you know, craft brewing and micro brewing and nano brewing and are these things different, are they the same stuff? It doesn't really matter, right?
No.
I think to Zev's point, like, it's about just, you know, making beer that tastes nice. Like, so approachable craft beer, I think it's useful to have that informal distinction because, you know, it's like when we talk about gateway beers all the time.
Exactly.
If you're a Carlton Draft or a Peroni drinker, what is going to be the beer that converts you over and then opens your mind to other things? Because if you 100%. Want to keep drinking Peroni for the rest of your life, that's fine. Like, if that's what you like, no dramas.
Nobody's judging you.
But just, well, I am.
I can.
But that aside...
Nobody except Jeff is judging.
That aside, you know, but yeah, if there's something that can at least open your palate and open your thinking to other types of beer, then that's awesome. And if someone... You know, there are beers that we would sort of put into that space. You know, and if we need to sort of have a category that does that, then that's fine. But I don't feel that that's sort of all that helpful.
Yeah. Look, I think, you know, I enjoy using the US craft beer market as a yardstick for our craft market because I think that they're, you know, I don't know what the exact number is, but maybe it's 10 years, maybe 15 years ahead of where we are. And if you look at, you know, where people are going, you know, that gateway crew, the people that are kind of sitting in the middle, they're not quite the right, they're not quite the left. You know, they're asking for IPAs.
I was going to say right and left, that's not a term you want to use in the States right now.
Yeah, exactly right, yeah. Well, of the beer spectrum, call it. But, you know, they're asking and ordering IPAs. That's what they're demanding, right? Whereas... we're struggling to get people to ask for a pale ale, right?
Yeah.
And I think that's really indicative of where that market is.
Well, I think that's always a question as to, like, okay, so Cooper's pale ale has existed for years. That's like a personal favourite of mine.
Right.
But when I stop and think about it, I don't really think about it as being a pale ale. I just think about it as being Cooper's Green.
Right.
And I think for a lot of people, they would just say, okay, that's Cooper's Green, that's Cooper's Red. They don't really know what it actually is, which just muddies the borders even further.
I mean, it's also not really like a pale ale in sort of, you know, the way that the American craft market would define a pale ale, right? So if you drink that, it's probably a pale ale, it's not American pale ale, and that's what most craft drinkers would think of is, like, if you said pale ale, you're thinking things that taste like Mornington or Pirate Life or whatever, you know. So those are now the benchmark pale ales.
Yeah, 100%, which has majorly shifted in the last 2 years.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Like what we call a pale ale. The bridge between Little Creatures, which was probably Australia's favourite pale ale for many years, and Pirate Life, which is arguably the best pale ale on the market.
Yeah.
You know, the bridge is two different
styles.
It's
a very long bridge.
Yeah. You know?
Yeah.
So it's interesting to see how that's shifted.
Mm.
Yeah, it's a really interesting one. But I guess to bring it back to the urban ale, just to kind of fill you in on where we were thinking,
yep.
you know, Have you guys ever heard of the idea of the urban cowboy? It was out of the South, the American South. Gillies was like the biggest honk tonk crowd, and they were like the first essentially club to put in a mechanical bull.
Right. Yep.
Ah.
And this term was coined, the urban cowboy, and it's the city slicker that rocks into the club with his big hat on, right? And never got on a bull in his life, but gets on that and rides it like a champion, and then goes home with the prettiest lady in the room, and that's your urban cowboy.
Okay.
So for me, the idea of putting urban in front of something, it almost makes it that it's not quite for. They're not quite cowboys, right? But they're trying to get there, you know, and they're trying to be a bit slicked up, and my demographic, especially when I was forming these concepts, I was in an environment where I was sitting with people every day in suits and ties, that were very conscious of what they were. It would be seen drinking, very conscious of the way they looked and all that kind of stuff. And I felt in some sense that they were underrepresented in the craft beer market. Mm-hmm. And there was, they're making this shift in their lives, this shift away from your mass and towards your micro in every other aspect, whether it's the wine they drink or, the clothes they wear or the food they eat. It's all about locals. And then they go and drink a Carlton Draft or a Peroni or, it's a wonder, right? And you think about what is it about craft beer that's not attracting them?
Mm-hmm.
Because yes, there are approachable craft beers in the market, but I really felt that there was very few people really representing that crowd. And sitting in a space for that crowd, and that's where the idea of like this urban, they're the urban cowboys of the beer world, right? So, and that's where the urban ale came from.
Sure, okay,
I get that.
That's cool.
Yeah, I mean, it's a way more complicated explanation than what I ever expected, and that's good.
Look, it's I'm just spewing it. I'm just giving you kind of my thoughts. So.
All right. So we should actually get more beer, but one thing before we do, I suppose, because we go out and I feel like everyone's opinion is based on what we've gone out and drank before, and so one forms the next thing that forms the next thing, and like my love of red ale always comes from the fact that I accidentally I got a pint of it for the price of a pot of the former tenant from. Modus operandi, and that's kind of how it grew into that. Jeff is obsessed. What are you obsessed with these days, Jeff?
Oh, lots of things. I don't know. It's like I go through sort of cycles. The Speedway Stout was like, that was the beer that I was really into for quite some time. Yeah, nowadays, just a bit of everything. Like, I don't think I have like a particular style that I'm obsessed with anymore. I think it's sort of, you start with, and I've told this story many times on the podcast, so I'll keep it short, but you start with you start with the IPAs, and then you want something stuff that's more hoppy, and then you get hop fatigue, and then you go, okay. then you discover dark beers, and so you have, Imperial Stouts, and you have, and those increase in potency over time, and then you sort of go, well, sometimes I just want a beer. Like, I had cider this afternoon while I was out, I had a game of golf this afternoon, went to the pub and had a cider, and went like, this is actually quite delicious. And so it's, it's about sort of not restricting yourself or really over-focusing on, if there's one thing you like, that's fine. But I think it's been, that was the New Beer's resolution, right?
Good point. We have New Beer's resolutions every year. Mine was to try and drink more, double IPAs. So then I wasn't so gobsmacked when I had one and said, oh, this is amazing. I wouldn't actually know the difference between them all.
Right.
But I guess the question to you is, how's... Because everything... I guess every beer we drink goes into our palate for the next beer.
Right.
Like, how did you get to this point? What sort of drinker are you? What sort of... where am I going to find you in the city drunken at 3 a.m.?
It's a great question. I'm an exceptionally inquisitive drinker, so if I see something different, I'll taste it. Mm-hmm. And just because I'm interested to understand what they're trying to go for. That said, even though I have a deep appreciation for, you know, the, I guess, call them less sessionable styles, I always find myself going back to, you know, something that I can sit on for 3, 4, or 5,
yep.
You know? For me, beer is, it's a love, you know, it's, I want to sit somewhere and I want to enjoy a fantastic beer and not feel big or bloated or turned off. I want to be able to go back for a second and a third and a fourth. Mm. Right. So I guess it's probably an admission, you know, I'm probably unlike many other, and this is where I clash with the other brewer that I work with, because he is the polar opposite.
Mm.
So you know, I'll be talking about, you know, brewing a Vienna Lager, you know, and doing this beautiful malt biscuit, you know, show off thing, and he'll be talking about, you know, brewing a Goza with, you know, flute de sol salt and, you know,
that sounds,
you know,
complicated.
Kolsch yeast. You know, to get Perry, you know, notes to it, you know, and I'm kind of like, well, yeah, but what about the Vienna Lager? So, yeah, that probably sums me up. Does it answer the question? Yeah.
I think it does.
Yeah.
Alrighty, I think we need some more beers. And we're back, and we're on to beer number one. And beer number one was going to be Collins Street Bruin's finest work, except it's still chilling. So in the meantime, we have the one that... All right, we've talked about these guys before. This is from Jess.
This is from Two Bears Brewing. So it's the experimental... We don't know who the underlying brewers are, but whenever they have an experimental beer, they release it under the Two Bears label. We could probably hazard a guess, but we probably shouldn't do that on air.
No, we probably shouldn't.
So this is the Return of the Red Baron, Red IPA. Mm. I'm really hoping it's a Snoopy reference rather than, like, you know, another kind of Red Baron reference. That would be kind of cool.
Well, I mean, a Snoopy reference would be more fun, I think.
It would be. Yeah. It would be.
But because, you know, right now it's sort of like, you know, Red Baron really just...
Yeah, that's right. So it's a red IPA, so you'd be right into this.
I bought it. This is my second one for the day.
Excellent, excellent. So 6.5%, 65 IBUs, so pretty punchy in terms of
decent balance,
hop profile. But yeah, let's try it.
What do people think? Because I pretty much started sipping it the moment I bought it from the bar.
Paolo S here in September said tasty red ale. Paul Christoph had it on the 3rd of August, said nothing, chaw bacon.
Jason said, solid tasty for 5%, great tang and bitter hops, but so that was in August.
Maybe it's a different version then, because if this is meant to be 6.5, it could be that they've re-released it or something.
Well, that is true. I mean, because there was a period where we got nothing but Two Bears.
Yeah.
Reds, basically. But depending on what time of the day you came here, what sort of beer you got, basically, or which one you got.
Yeah, Daniel P. here in April, nice piney hopped up red ale, hints of toffee and caramel poking through earthy and piney bitter finish. It's a very elaborate description.
The thing that, because, where was it, on Friday I had the Doctor's Orders new red IPA, and that was quite nice, but it had that caramel bottom that I don't really like about red IPAs.
Mm.
And some of them have it, some of them don't.
Mm.
And this one, I don't feel like has that caramel bottom.
I don't
think
so at all. Yeah, I'm not tasting any of that.
No.
Yeah, well, I think, I think the hops are... if it's there, it's been completely wiped out by the hops, which is, you know, not necessarily a good or a bad thing. It depends on what you like.
Well, it does sound like a bad action film where it's sort of like, they've been completely wiped out by the hops.
I feel like sometimes when you get that kind of overwhelming caramelliness, it's somewhat indicative of just imbalance.
Sure.
Mm. Right? And what I'm really enjoying about this is I'm finding it really, really balanced.
Mm.
Yep. But yeah, and that's the number one thing that I look for in a beer. You know, I think it's great to show off different flavors, but the number one thing you got to go for is balance. Right, it's got to be. In my view.
Yeah, and I think so. But I think just that everyone has a different view as to sort of what balance is, and I think that comes to what we were just discussing before, which is like, what are you expecting when you drink this beer? Are you, you know, because if you are expecting that sort of biscuit, malty, sort of toffee-ish kind of thing. But yeah, I agree with you though. I really like this sort of format of the red IPA. I think you particularly find it with like double IPAs when you get the really sweet double IPAs when, you know, because they're boozier, more sugar, but they haven't balanced it off with like, yeah, the hop profile gets out of whack because you get all of that sweetness coming through. So I quite like this.
Yeah, I'm a fan. I approve it.
Yeah, agreed.
So what are we going to rate this out of 5 then? You knew it was coming.
Well, that's right. I'm going to give it a 3.75. I think it's worth more than a 3.5. Just for your background, is like our benchmark. Like, this is a good beer that we'll drink again. So anything that's the Christoph scale.
Although we had Emily from Froth on last week, and she gave a beer like 2 stars.
Yeah, well, she would give no never mind to the Christoph scale. I imagine.
Exactly.
So, you know. 3.75 is where I'm at with this beer.
I think this is... I want to give it a 4 because I really like it.
I know you do.
But I will probably go for 3.75 as well. I will definitely drink it again. I think it's above the grade. It's just... I don't think it's quite 4 worthy.
I might disagree with you on that, Chris. I'm inclined to go 4.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason for that... For me, I'm getting so much dried fruit. Right on the aroma, to me it's like just 100% dried peaches, you know, and that is what I absolutely adore, right? And so this is just a personal preference, and you know,
no, I'm, you're not allowed to have personal preferences. Sorry. No.
But yeah, I'm going 4, guys.
That's very cool.
Yeah.
Actually have reasons that are probably more valid than, or at least more research than what ours would be.
Yeah, that's right. So I like people who have reasons they can explain.
Yeah, it feels good.
Yeah.
So what's the aggregate? It's still 3.75.
Yeah. So you get a vote. It didn't count on this occasion, but that's all right.
But all right. We like the sentiment, you know.
Yeah. Fair enough.
Alrighty, well, we should stop and then move on to the last and more bitter of the once beers. And we're here on the last beer. And the last beer is what we talked about at the start. It would be rude if we didn't actually drink some once bitter beer. The fabled Urban Ale, the label is cool as fuck, but I haven't actually taken a sip. And this is always an awkward situation because, you know, what if we don't like it?
Yeah.
But before we start, like, I think we did talk about it. Like, what's with the name, Once Bitter? Where is the origins of the name?
Once Bitter is actually really interesting. So, my story is, I started brewing beer. My parents sent me to a religious boarding school.
Oh, no.
Yep. Yep, and I think I didn't fancy the idea of being away from dad's liquor cabinet for, you know, extended periods of time.
I'll bet they loved it though.
Yeah, they sure did. So that's where my beer journey started. It started in brewing beer in our school kitchen, you know, lugging fermenters back to our dorms and that's where like all the passion comes from.
I didn't expect that the story to go that way, but I'm okay with it.
I ended up coming back to Australia, and that was in Jerusalem, as it happens. I came back to Australia, you know, went to university, got a job in finance,
did all the things you were supposed to do,
exactly right?
Exactly right.
So sounds terrible.
ended up, a few years down the line and saying, this just isn't for me. What I wanted to do is I wanted to tell my story, which was the story away from the, you know, structures of the corporate world, the story away from, you know, you know, doing what you're doing because it's the right thing to do. Yep. And you know, this
feels like either a Disney movie or a Marvel movie right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, straight up. You know what somebody said to me? Somebody said to me, dude, you're the modern Trappist. Like, straight up, you are flipping brewing beer in your monastery, right?
Yeah.
Holy shit. Go on.
Anyway, so I knew the story that I wanted to tell with this beer, which was really about moving away from the big and towards the small, and that was really the position of, you know, this urban ale, which, you know, positioned in between your, you know, mass produced, you know, beers and your craft, and being that gateway, call it. And
just like a gateway drug, yes.
Exactly right. And so we're thinking, well, all right, fantastic. We get the story, we know where we're going with this. What is the what are the visual cues to say this, right? And we're searching, and we come across it straight up, Melbourne Laneways, right? Melbourne Laneways, it's where the suit in the ivory tower comes down at lunchtime to find his barista. You know, it's on a first name basis. It's his escape from the...
That's Melbourne anywhere.
Oh, 100%. And I think that the Laneways personify, it's the grungy amongst the classy. It's, that level of authenticity, you know, amongst the bling. And we felt that we really... fit, you know, what we were trying to say really fit in that kind of visual context. So we're like, okay, great, what are we going to call this? And so just trying to get inspiration, we're flicking through images of Melbourne Laneways. And we come across this image of Hosier Laneway.
Mm-hmm.
And it just says, once bitter. Just like...
and it's like, dumb.
It's an ale... you know, bitter ale, yeah, right? Yeah. Same deal, right?
Yep.
Like, it's about once being bitter, but not anymore. It's about, it's about making that movement. Like, it just all made sense. It was just like penny dropped. It was just like, yep, that's it. We're like, okay, great. We better find the artist, because we want to steal his IP, right?
Yep.
And like, go from there.
This is why it took 18 months to get the beer.
Mm. Yeah, exactly right.
The beer was just waiting in bottles, waiting for the label.
Yeah, exactly right. So we found the... we were searching. We could not find any wall ever that ever said once bitter. We could not find it. As much Google searching as we could do, we could not find it. I did a Google search, and Google... I'm not sure why it didn't happen or I didn't see it before, but Google autocorrected to once bitten, right? Because
that's once bitten.
We found the image was quite a famous image of a local artist. I'm not sure exactly who it was, but he had done this massive once bitten, twice shy in Hosea in 2013.
Ah.
Right? And the image that I'd originally seen had cut off halfway through the end, so the end looked like an
hilarious.
And that's like a proper story.
That's really cool. Where the name came from.
That is awesome.
This is just too good. And it was also great because we didn't have any...
Now there's no IP issues.
Exactly,
yeah, that's right.
Problem solved.
That's really cool.
Yeah, that is awesome. I quite like this.
Oh, that is true.
Thank you.
But it's... For some reason, when I had my first sip, I expected there to be like an aftertaste, but there isn't one. It's quite smooth. It's quite easy.
I think the golden ale style, the first golden ale I ever had was the Grand Ridge. They do it's like the Yarra Valley Gold or something like that. Yeah, that was sort of the one of probably like on the early end of like when I was getting into craft beer. I had it like Mrs. Palmer's or something like that. They're a big supporter of Grand Ridge, and I think. It reminds me a lot of that in the sense of like it's very easy drinking. I think it has less of that the kind of sweet malty sort of back end to it.
Right. But
then which actually I quite like my as we were just discussing earlier. Like I'm not a huge fan of it being sort of like it's because it's beer, it's not meant to be like sweet. That's not the
right.
That's
right.
Not the, it would not be in accordance with this name. I quite like it too. I don't drink a lot of golden ales, it's only really, when either someone brings one and says, this is the beer, let's drink this, if I'm just like at a pub and just going, well, I've had everything else on this list, I'm really, you know, there's nothing on a revisit. So yeah, here's the gold now. Let's just roll the dice.
Yeah.
Right.
No, this is nice. But what does Untappd say?
Well, what Untappd says,
because
is,
you know, nothing is really real until Untappd says it.
So someone checked. So yeah, Misty's in Hosier Lane. So do you ship this beer to Misty?
100%.
Is Misty still open?
Yeah. Misty's cool.
I went there I went there like a couple of months ago, and it was like shut down, like completely closed. And I thought
they have weird hours.
Yeah. Okay.
I reckon you're in the wrong laneway. I don't back you to be in the right. I reckon.
Actually, knowing my track record, you're probably right.
Okay, so what are people saying? So Gus N at Norris's Bar, 12th of November. Not a bad golden. Some nice, although light, fruitiness. 3.25. Dylan T in South Yarra.
I assume Dylan Thomas, the poet.
Must be. Mm. This is not very poetic, though, but, you know, it's a useful comment nonetheless. Totally fine. Crisp, some nice malt. Little hop character. Solid. 3.25.
Solid is always a good rating.
What else are we seeing here?
A lot of people got badges.
They did.
Which I think is a good thing.
Ezekiel at Destination Unknown. Light with a nice full flavour. 3.5. Yeah, as you say, lots of ratings. Not many comments coming through.
Yeah.
Look, I just like Corey M at Bartronica. Checked it in. He didn't give... no, it's 3.75. But his photo was just of the Ghostbusters pinball.
Yeah, that's right. Which, so, I mean, is very exciting. Yeah. Let's not poo-poo that.
Exactly.
That's amazing.
I mean, that's kind of the winning move here.
Okay, and Jason F. at Misty. Like, this just... there's no comment, but this was five badges in one, basically.
Whoa.
The dude got the Untappd 6th Anniversary, Playing the Field, Bar Explorer, Down Under Level 2, and Wheel of Styles Level 2, all in one go. Like, I think I've seen someone get five badges from one beer. So there you go. Like, you're bringing joy to the world.
Fair enough.
So, all right. Finishing this up, I guess the obvious question before we say, you know, what we think, what do you rate your beer?
I mean, yeah, were you happy with the... Completely happy with... Oh, you're never completely happy, I suppose. No. Like,
right.
You know, but.
Perfection is a myth.
Agreed, 100%. I have to say, yes, I was thrilled. I felt that... I had absolutely no idea, right? Before this, we sold our first pint of this beer. I had no idea where I'd be sitting with thousands of liters of beer... Right, and not know what to do with it, right?
Yep.
Well, I mean, there are many things you can do with thousands of litres of beer. It just takes a while.
Yeah, exactly right. Or the exact opposite, right? Mm. I had absolutely no idea. We did very little consumer testing. You know, I mean, how do you do consumer testing? I mean, we got no money here. You know, what do you...
Yep.
Everyone's broke. It's
right,
beer.
Right, 100%. So I really had no idea. We hit market, and within 3 days, we were forward sold for 2 months. We could not bring on more venues than we did after that first 3 days.
Amazing.
Since that, we've, you know, out of every venue that we've brought on, you know, most are not craft beer venues, so generally not rotating taps. Mm. But you know, out of all the venues we brought on, two have rotated us off, and I
bastards.
Think, yeah,
cute
that's
fish
fine.
Egg.
Yeah, that's fine, you know, because I'm happy to be rotated off other craft beer. That's fine. If they're rotating taps, that's just the nature of it. That's great. But I think in, you know, if the beer wasn't right for the market that we were trying to pitch it to, then it wouldn't sell.
Yeah.
Yep.
You know, the brand is not a recognized brand.
Mm.
Not yet. You know, the only thing that drives a person to go back for it is if the product's good.
Yep.
And the fact that it's sitting in venues where people are generally not looking at craft beers, and we're really are servicing a market that you know we're introducing, you know, craft beer to a market that wouldn't otherwise. I say, I'm digging it. I like it. You know, are there things that we could improve about this beer? Yeah, there are. You know, quality control, it's always going to be an issue. Mm. You know, but I'm really happy with where it's at.
That's great.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, how many stars then?
That's an unfair question.
You can then go up to five, right?
Yeah. Like it's
I'd say maybe two. No.
Damn it, Emily, yeah. You've started something now.
I'd take the fifth.
No, fair enough.
No. All right, you get a pass on this. What do we give it out of five?
I give it... That's a good question. I mean, golden nails are not my style, right? So that automatically gives it a bit of a handicap. But I need to think about it in a more broad context than that. I think 3.5. Like I quite like the beer. I would definitely like if I saw it, I would definitely drink it again. I think as a gateway beer, it's great. Like you know, it's not too hoppy, it's not too punchy. Yeah, I can totally see how people would easily make the transition from drinking macro lager to drinking this. So I think you've done a really good job in that context.
Thank you.
Yeah,
thank you.
And I do think it's a perfect would drink again beer.
Yeah.
But you get a pint, you get another pint, you get, I totally agree. 3.5 is like the right perfect rating for us.
Cool, thank you. I'm exceptionally flattered. <That's> like that's, you know, from craft beer, you know, aficionados, like that really does does.
You mean idiots who drink.
Yeah.
Which actually probably equals the same thing.
So we should have just called ourselves that, idiots who drink.
I think we did toy with that idea at one point.
But yeah, I'm really flattered, so thank you very much.
No, thanks for taking the time to come hang with us, man.
No, that's cool, that's cool. But, Do it again.
And so we talked about it off air, but so you guys have things that aren't the Urban Ale as well coming out.
Absolutely. So
what are we expecting, an Urban Pilsner or an Urban Cowboy?
I think Urban Ale is gonna be the only Urban... I might be wrong about
you will
that,
have to call a one-off the Urban Cowboy, though. Yeah, you're going to have to do that one of these 100%. Days. Like, yeah.
But yeah, I reckon. I see two things happening here. This beer for me is really a super blend. You get a bit of hop, you get a bit of malt. You know, that's about it, right? There's nothing that's like the hops, right? Or you get some malt. While everything under the once bitter, you know, label is going to be about approachable craft beer. One of the next ones, we're going to bring out another two with certainty under the once bitter label. One of them will be all about the hop, and it'll be kind of straw in color. So it'll be almost lighter in color, but show off more, you know, hop late hopping. And then the one will be, you know, on the other side of the Urban Ale, which will be all about the malt. And you know, I'm really driving for a Vienna Lager.
That'd be nice, yeah.
I'm all about, you know, that biscuit, like, that.
It's like the fourth time you've mentioned it this episode.
Right,
so,
yeah.
I figured there was, like, some sort of deep love going on there.
Yeah, I think malt is underrepresented in beers let's say, sessionable craft beers that are available on the market.
You're right. The vast majority of beers that are craft beers available are very much more hop driven than malt driven, and I think part of that just sort of, you know, plays to the obsession of people with sort of, you know, hops basically.
Yeah.
And but I mean, Chris obviously is into the red ale. I think definitely. There's I mean, that means there's a space for it, right?
So absolutely, absolutely. And then I know I mentioned this to you guys offline, but you know, this next kind of, you know, pilot edition, I'm not sure exactly what we're going to call it, but we're certainly going to be doing, you know, single barrel you know, batches and doing some really funky cool shit, which I'm also super excited about, but you're gonna have to track that down because that's not going to be available.
Look, we'll just call you up. We have all your details, it'll be fine. So we should finish up. So we have been the Brunswick Beer Collective. I've been Chris Shorten. This has been Jeffrey Chee.
Good evening.
And this has been Zeev.
Hey.
Zeev,
whatever you like.
From Commons Street Brewing. Check them out. They're at places in Melbourne. They might be in, you know, they'll probably expand to the rest of the country at some point, I assume, in some sort of world domination thing.
Oh, yeah.
And in the meantime, we will talk to everyone next week.